Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster. Hey people, this is Aram. Dylan has been mulling over some thoughts on world building, so we sat down in front of our mics and hashed them out over an hour. We talk about the tropes that annoy us and came up with suggestions on how we think our fantasy playgrounds can be made just a little bit better. We will occasionally revisit this topic and come up with an actual title for it in the future. But for now, welcome to Dylan is Angry at a Thing, Episode 1.
I got two dork-ass world-building things that I don't see talked about often enough.
All right.
We're going to talk about the easy one first, which is simply stop making elf countries.
Okay.
I was listening to another podcast, which I won't mention, but like, it's just the standard formula of like, oh, this is the dwarf nation, this is the halfling nation, this is the, you know, and talking about like equipment and the way that was built. And then I was like, we had just put out the Treant episode where we had like an entire thing where it was like an orc gnome collaboration to invent cannons.
Yeah.
If you're going to sit down and do world building, you start off with sort of who built this city? What's the dominant sort of cultural idea? And we have this big idea of like every species in Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy in general, super unique. So they're all, that's how we stop though.
Right.
Like maybe the underlying architecture of this thing is gnomish or whatever.
Right.
But at some point, if we're not in like, which is gonna, this is gonna be the tangent that brings us into topic two. If we're not in the region of history where like, the god of elves went bippity boppity elves, and then like 300 years later the first humans started wandering around, they've probably intermingled at some point. Like the culture, like they're around each other. In the case of elves, there's a weird situation with the longevity. It makes a lot of sense to have sort of elven isolationism when you're getting out to 700 800 years old.
Sure, or at least they can see a project through.
Yeah, you have a very different perspective on the world, you know, even just like the idea of like, you know, having all of the shorter lived races refer to them as the retirement homes, fucking great shit. But for the most part, even a 250 year old dwarf, right, if they're dying at like a quarter century, but they're still like 85 years old, like that motherfucker is still hanging out with humans. Like that's not worlds different. You've seen, you know, middle-aged people hanging out at a coffee shop, like I'm gonna show my Canadian here. Everybody has seen a 40-year-old guy hanging out with the old farmer at a Tim's, like sitting there having a coffee.
Right. And also elves aren't there in the quarry.
Wildly
they're not
unrelatable.
The ones digging up the granite. They're not the ones laying the foundation.
Yeah. Here's the thing. They fucking are. Cause they build shit. Right? Like if you got lumberjacks, like the dwarves aren't gonna build everything out of stone. Unless you're in like such an absurdly high magic setting that the dwarves are like stone singers who are molding this rocks to the, and the elves are building everything out of wood because whatever the fuck. If you're living in a world where dwarves and humans are roughly equivalent and sometimes you can make a wizard if you want a real hard, they also need wood, which means they're gonna go out and do lumberjack shit. You're gonna get dwarven lumberjacks. You're gonna get halfling lumberjacks. You're gonna get fucking elven lumberjacks.
You're also gonna like, get a lot of cheap imported labor
doing these jobs
from people who aren't necessarily from this city.
Yep, you're gonna have your standard economies if you're working in that sort of world. You're gonna have like even more so in like elven cities where, again, like you've got a whole aristocracy established because these motherfuckers never die. But then like you get your new money, old money fights, right? Some human is going to come out with a clever ass way of doing something and have to be inducted into the elven council despite only being 95.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'd be miserable about it. But they would hold enough power in the city that like you can't not let it happen.
Especially because human kingdoms are usually so vast. They're going to have a lot of resources. You're going to have to get something from them.
No, there aren't human kingdoms. That's the point. Because those humans have made treaties with dwarves. And some of the dwarf clans have been like, no, we won't get on board with that. And some of the other dwarves have. And now there's this weird little province that's like 50-50. And these dwarves have other deals with some orcish. Like, your starting point in this mythology is likely that sort of isolationism of just like, we drop these. It's Civ, right?
Right.
You hit go and the elves are in this corner and the dwarves are in this but if we're not, again, in like...
little halfling city state over here.
Yeah. If we're not within the first 10 or so elven generations, so we're looking at like a millennium.
Yeah.
Those motherfuckers have interacted. Maybe there's like distributions of the population. Of course, like there are going to be primarily dwarven things. But if you've got something where a war happened, like... oh, yeah, the ancient Archlich is going to come back after being sealed for 10,000 years, and now the cage is finally opening. You're telling me in 10,000 motherfucking years, the halflings are still just not building doors enough so that the humans, who are, like, coming through pretty regularly for trade, can enter their houses?
Yeah, maybe not their personal homes, but certainly the inn and the market would have adaptations.
And again, keep in mind, I'm saying like after 10,000 years, I think you would still be a bit of a dickhead, or like it would be like, it's like the halfling equivalent of trailer trash where it's like, yeah, I just like built the short house, you know, I couldn't like, oh, you're like, you just won't let humans into your house. You're not going to account for that. It's like, I had to do it cheap. Okay. I couldn't have the vaulted ceilings.
Yeah. We'll make the door a little bigger, but the handle's still going in the middle. That's the halfling way.
Yeah. All of the stuff that you're still thinking of in terms of materials and the way things are done, like those are cultural. Just let them be cultural. It's not that elves build things that are wispy and thin and delicate. It's that there's a culture over here that values things that are very precise and get things done with like finesse and dexterity and precision versus a culture over here that's a little bit more rugged. That's just like, hey, it's got to be able to do it over and over again. Like, this is not dwarven. This is workman.
Yes. If you live to 1,000 years, you perhaps have a penchant for craftsmanship. You can spend 50 years on a filigree. You can make these long sculpted columns because you have time.
But that's the other bit is like in cities, sure. But like elven weaponry, like we have people that make beautiful engraved, like precious swords. Those aren't for stabbing people. Those are ceremonial. Those are like,
and they can also be for stabbing people.
But they're art.
Everyone designs art. Everyone puts extra effort into beautiful things.
These like 50-year swords. Because again, let's fucking get the proportionalities right. If your elves live to be 1,000, and I'm doing rounding error here, right? Like humans live to be 100. 50 years of work to an elf is 5 years of work to a human.
Yep.
I would not spend 5 years on something I was sending into battle. You have to churn those out. Those have to be things you can get done on the order of like hours, days, maybe.
I could maybe see the elves spending extra time on the weapons as a reminder to themselves how costly war is to elves.
Sure. But that's also something that would then leak into culture, right?
Right.
Like the idea of having a 50-year blade, even for humans, would be something like, no. These lands were originally held by elves, and you know, we just have some of their culture has been passed along. We've worked with elves. I studied for a couple of years under a couple of journeymans. They viewed it as like, you know, quick internships, popped in for a week and left. But like for me, it was foundational. And now I worked on this that my grandfather worked on, my father worked on, and now I'm gonna finish the blade. I'm going to hand it down to my son so that he can remember that, like, the same thing that elves always talked about. You can't just rebuild a life. A sword has to take as much effort to build as the life it could take, which, frankly, would hit harder for the humans because now it's 3 generations of work being handed down to this kid. And this kid is being told, like, this blade could kill a person. But I want you to remember that guy over there dying in a rocking chair started that sword.
Yeah.
Like, if any one of us died in that path, you don't hold that blade. That blade carries the weight of those right? Like, and then you get those evolutions, right? That's part of why so many heartbreakers are so boring. Because the thing that's going to let you build an interesting world is the fact that I spun that out of some horse shit. You just said some words and we just bounced on it. But like the idea of a human's interpretation of an elf work ethic makes that interesting. Whereas like just elves being like, well, I can take 50 years because it's not that big a deal to me. Fuck you.
Yeah. Humans have to toil quickly. We have to be as industrious as we can because there's so short a period. You start, let's say, in ye olden days, interning or apprenticeshipping at like 12 to 14 years old. You get good around 18 to 20. You maybe master a craft by 30. And then you got 20 years before your body breaks down or the plague takes you to actually get something done.
Yeah, but even then, like, think about how a human is going to internalize being in that, like, in fucking Lothlorien or some shit like that. You're surrounded by beauty. You appreciate that, in this case, like, one person could oversee the entire construction, but it was still 500 years it took to put this building the way it was meant to be.
Right.
I'm
What's
gonna
that
work
Gothic
on...
cathedral that took, like, 1,000 years? It looks like a sand castle.
Milan?
I think so.
Il Duomo?
Something like that, yeah. Took like 1,000 years to finish. An elf could have potentially seen that through.
Yeah. But at the same time, like if you're a human who was raised around the idea of like, no, we do things properly, and sometimes properly means a century.
Mm-hmm.
And like for you, that means putting the work in, but same thing with the generational efforts, right? Like you reap the rewards of your grandfather's efforts, did you not?
Yep.
So you put in your efforts so that your grandchildren can see it done. Will you? Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe
but
not.
But you got to see the beauty. And now, you know. Versus, like I said, the dwarven ethic of like, yeah, but that's going to fall.
Right.
Like, look at that. That's delicate. And now that, and that's something that I think a lot of the fantasy races, like, picture the way orcs are generally depicted. Picture the way humans actually are. Like, all of that sort of brutalist, we're just going to build the shit hardy, is going to fit.
Yeah, look how we build now. We're like, we're going to build a box. It's going to be four over, one under, stores there, living above, nothing decorative or expansive because we have to. Also, it's because building techniques have improved. We don't layer things like we used to. We don't add those details like we used to because we don't have to account for errors in production. They built those windows back and they built the edging around them so that the people doing the construction could make changes as they go because the materials don't line up with what the plans are. We don't have to worry about that anymore. Everything's flush because it just fits in like Legos.
Right. And like for everything that holds up better in the old days because we used better materials, there's something else where it's like, yeah, but somebody didn't know how this worked and cut a corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My grandpa built his house. Hell, he built our house growing up. And like structurally, they were incredibly sound. My cousin inherited my grandpa's house, opened up the wall to fix a light, and immediately was like, oh, this should have been on fire. This should have been on fire a thousand times over. Oh my God, yeah. Why is this like this? Grandpa, you were so clever. Why did you not know you couldn't do this?
He was clever with the basics, but maybe he didn't know electrical that well, and this just worked.
They invented electrical during his lifetime.
Right.
Lightning happened for the first time, and he and his father went, oh my God, what was that?
Yeah, he was just adapting to what he could at the time. Standards have changed.
Yeah, and that's sort of the mentality of like, okay, yeah, that's beautiful, and you call it timeless because your culture is really sort of dictated by this aristocracy that basically never dies.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's so slow to shift and adapt new things.
Yeah. And like I said, that's the thing that lets me go, like, I really do think elves are the single case where I'm like, they would get isolationists in some cases.
Yeah.
But everybody else is going to start mixing and incorporating. And like, again, there will be pockets, but like, you're building in the center of the fucking mountain. Okay, you've got a bunch of stone, but like, you don't mine bricks.
Right.
Bake them. And also, you can't start a fire in a tiny little hole. You need good ventilation for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need people to be bringing things in and out, which means you've got fucking orcs. You've got gnomes who are crafty little pricks. The idea of like, dwarf and gnome collaborations should be constant because that engineering and that like rigidity of thought, like you can build something intricate and complex, but I can build something that's actually going to work. Okay. And now take that 1,000 years on. And now we've got a college teaching engineering in the middle of a mountain that's being taught by orcs and humans and dwarves.
Yeah. And certainly elves and gnomes have some crossover with like jewelry and stonework as far as gems. But you know, a dwarf's going to want to go to the gnome 9 times out of 10 than bother with the elf and the 1 year of haggling it's going to take to get that order filled.
1 year of haggling and then having to wait like 20 years to get the first draft. Like, fucking hell. Which is the other bit, right? Like, even when we talk about elves, what are they forging a sword out of?
What do the elves usually
fucking
use?
Metal?
Right, absolutely. They're not going to mine it. Yeah.
No, but this is my point. Especially early on. Yeah, they will.
Right.
There when they are first going were. To have to be elven miners.
Yeah. If elves existed before all the others, which is generally how
generally
fantasy
how
is,
we do it. Yeah.
They were doing all of it. They were doing the mining. They were doing the clear cutting. They were doing the farming. But you never see it now. Well, even elf cities are just these perfect cities that exist with no industry whatsoever.
I think the odds of elven miners go up if elves aren't the first ones there. Because you have to wait 100 years. Like, let's say humans are there first.
Sure.
It's not until a generation of humans has fully died that the elves really start going like, it's weird we didn't do that, isn't it? Like, we're all on the same page. That was fucking odd.
I guess if all you have are elves, you just think of 1,000 years as standard.
Just, that's just how long it takes
to die.
Which, yeah. Again, like, if all you have is humans and then elves show up, you're suddenly like I said, 4 generations deep. You've watched someone reach old age and die, and we're still 30 years into the next generation after that before you're really going like, I'm feeling quite spry still. I don't know why your joints are so bad at stuff. But then that entire time, those elves got jobs as lumberjacks, got jobs as miners.
Yep.
Maybe they got chased out of fucking town because it was like, holy shit, all elves are vampires.
Right.
And so they had to go learn a new trade somewhere. Now he's a miner and a lumberjack.
It would be weird to be a human and have like your friend who's in their 20s throughout your entire life.
And without a reference point. All of the shit you've got in your fantasy world, the mithril, the fucking adamantine, and all of the thought processes you've got for like, oh, this is elven, this is dwarf. You don't actually have to change that. You just have to stop saying that it's elven. Give the culture a name. Say it's from a place.
Right.
Make trade happen.
Right.
You can have, you know, random
it's populations. A region.
Yeah.
Mithril comes from these mountains. Yeah. And whoever shows up there, it's attracted to the mithril. There's a reason why there are towns and cities here because it's a valuable resource. Yeah.
And now mithril is also a common thing in the elves because it's so hard to work with that it was one of those things where we had to make the negotiation of like, this takes time. Like you have to delicately heat it or it oxidizes or some shit and it turns brittle. So the only blacksmiths that could reasonably work it were the elves.
Maybe the dwarves found it in the mountain, but the elves had the ironwood that burned hot enough in order to work it.
Possibly. Like I said, maybe it's a time thing. Maybe it's a temperature thing. Maybe it's a wisdom thing. Maybe it's a fucking magic thing.
Or a combination of all.
Yeah. But the point is, like, all of it becomes more interesting when it's not, hello, Oliver.
Oh, hey, buddy.
Here is a cat.
Oh, the most perfect cat.
I love you dearly. I need you to want attention when I'm not doing stuff.
It's no fun.
Yeah, he's a little prick. Anyway, like all of it becomes more interesting when it's that result of a collaboration, when it's just a culture. So again, don't make like hell, keep the fucking elven names. Just have weird shit where like there's a human running around and his name is fucking the only elf name I could think of was Elenthielrin. It's just because that's the town he grew up in. That's how the language works, bud. I grew up speaking this language. I fully realize that that wound up being more of a tirade than I intended, but also, like, guys, how are we still doing this?
Let's just take D&D and let's take the Forgotten Realms, because that is their default setting now. If it's as old as they say it is, there have been civilizations for 40,000 years.
We have stories of civilizations rising and falling, empires being created and destroyed, and yet no halflings moved in.
Right. They're just still so segregated.
They still think of these things.
That have integration as human cities, and even then, not that much.
No. Like, they fucking gave numbers in 3.5, and it's always like 70, 80% human still. Like,
yeah.
It's not necessarily true of all of them, but like
the majority.
Yeah.
And like, those are the most integrated. You go to the elven cities and it's like 99% elves.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We have an orc.
Mm-hmm.
We got one of those.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And it implies that they're all horribly racist. Because why else would the city be that way?
The thing is, they are. Like, there is like shit like Sentul's Keep where they worship Bane and are explicitly racist and human supremacists.
Yeah, like, sure.
There is a lot of racism in the Forgotten Realms. And like, yeah, sure. You want to play something real verisimilitude. Like, there is going to. But one of the things that's going to fuel that is having them next to each other to fight.
Yeah, sure. But also, like, if you take the Star Trek view on things, right? Yeah. Okay, there's elves and dwarves and halflings and humans and orcs, and maybe they all kind of looked at each other and was like, that's not like me. But that falls apart as soon as there's a talking dragon. And they're like,
fucking
wait a
mind
minute.
Flayers showed up and you were still pissy yeah. about the one guy with pointy ears?
No, no, you're all on the same team.
That guy's just short.
But he doesn't want to eat my brain.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to bake me with fire and steal all my gold and take it back to his mountain kingdom.
What's your fucking problem, guys?
Yeah, exactly. No, we all have a commonality now.
Yeah.
We're the two-legged mortals reasonable. Compared to the others.
We all eat food.
Yeah, not gold. No, it just doesn't make sense. There's so many others to other. Why would it be the rest of the mortals?
Is it maybe you could come up with some like logic around like how common those things are, and then the fact of like people not moving around, right? The usual county problem of like, oh, well, I've lived in one place my whole life. I've never seen a dragon because I've never seen like different kinds of birds, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. You're going to have pockets like that.
In major cities, people are going to have a different view on things.
Even then, like non-major cities, smaller places, little trading towns, right? Like until you are getting to fully, this is a farm. There's a farm and 500 miles down the road, there's another farm and that's what we call town.
Yeah.
Like until you get that deep, you're going to get a bit of everybody everywhere, right? Like this is something where for some reason we've all agreed that there's a single continent we all live on. It's not like fucking, oh, well, I've never seen a black person because they all lived in Africa. No, you dumb fuck. They're right. There.
They're there. They're just there. And in the past, in our own like human past, in the real world, right? The forests were scary for a reason. Now imagine if there's actual monsters in them. Right? That will unify a people. You have to. And the first time you watch an elf just stride out of one with no problem whatsoever living in it, knowing there are monsters in there, you're going to have a certain respect for them coming in, not a fear.
Alternately, you know, we do have pretty common assumptions of like, oh, that person was safe, therefore they have a deal with the thing that is dangerous.
It could be that too.
Pretty common for xenophobia.
Yeah.
But again, that's like when we're first seeing elves. This is also all ignoring the fact that, like, a lot of these worlds have, like, gods talking to you.
Right.
Like, right. Lathander coming down and being like, also, leave Legolas alone. He's kind of cool. He worships a different pantheon, but I do, like, go to cookouts at Corallon sometimes. He does solid work.
The first guy to put a couple lenses together in a tube and see his chariot racing across the sky, bringing the dawn, they're going to be like, oh, the world's a bit bigger than I've anticipated.
But that does bring me to my other thing, which is if I'm still surprised I haven't seen anybody write an adventure or a fantasy story legitimately starting in the first 1,000 years of the world.
Right. Early.
Because one, history is hard to write. Like,
it is.
Why are you sitting there and telling me there had to be 10,000 years of like, write 400 years of history? Like, we still haven't seen the first generation of elves die.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know they're mortal yet. We know they can be killed, but like we don't know they're mortal.
I guess we got a bit of that in the Silmarillion in the Bible book. Yeah, right. That's it. Yeah. He begot he. There's like 18 pages of that.
Yeah, which is obviously fucking dull, but
Genesis, the fantasy book.
you know, you do what you got to do when you're a lunatic.
And I guess, like, there's a certain idea of, like, okay, so the gods existed first because they had to exist to bring everything into reality. And then there was always this ancient primordial force, like the Titans or something else that came out of the god stuff.
We've talked about this in D&D. I like the lore of, like, the blood war of, you know, we started, there were angels and demons and they were fighting. And then there were devils brought about by angels who were fighting the demons and essentially just, like, took on some level of corruption. Sure. That could be billions of years. I don't give a shit. They're immortal. But at some point, the earth was created, the material plane. At some point, there was this continent, and somebody looked at it and was like, let there be elves. And somebody was like, that's a cool idea. What if those were shorter and died faster?
Yeah, what if someone those were did slightly the math.
Taller, died even faster? What if they were very short, like very short, more living, though? Back to the short guy living.
Side note. Everyone ignores that. In every D&D book, elves are slightly shorter than men. Everyone ignores that. Just like Marvel ignores the height of Wolverine, everyone ignores the idea that elves are shorter than humans.
So here's where I approve of it. There's a little voice in my head that goes, when you make elves, like, thin and delicate and wispy and all that shit, and then you also make them 5'6". There's something inherently, like, you've just made the elves into what, like, Tolkien thought women were. Like, they all wander around in dresses. They all have their long flowing hair. They're all 5'6" and pretty. Like, elves were just
they women. Can never look older than 30. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For, like, the wood elves, I usually make them shorter. Because to me, that makes sense. They're in the trees. They're doing acrobatic stuff. They're running through the forest, ducking under the branches.
The build you associate with acrobatics is short.
Right. Like gymnasts. But the high elves are quite literally high. 6'2", splendid. The dresses hit them just right, you know.
I think, again, coming back to the initial thing, drop the high elf, wood elf distinction. Because that's just going to be different cultures, right? Like, those are...
It's just where they live.
Yeah. It's just where they live. And the moment you stop making this weird isolationist thing, like, again, like, why do you have
there's
two breeds of elves?
There's a traditional set of elves that says, no, we live by the old rules. We stay in the woods. We take what we need. We exist. We coexist with the land. And then there's the high elves who are like, no, we shape this world for what it is. The high elves believe the forest is a garden, while the wild elves or the forest elves believe the forest is a forest. Yeah. That's my distinction for them.
I absolutely... I'm on board with that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just like, they don't need to be biologically different. Right.
Right. Right. Like, that's silly.
Right. So, like, having, oh, the high elves are all tall and the wood elves are all short. Like, that's unnecessary. You know, just like these guys are druids. That's why they're out there, because they like the trees. Those guys are over there in the cities and they've made friends with the, you know, a weird gnomish tinkerer cult and a bunch of orcs who were also like, yeah, I do. Buildings are pretty nifty. There are certain things that are going to be biologically different in the sense of, like, dark vision. If your eyes literally work different, if you die faster, right? But 90% of the rest of it is going to be cultural. Right, is just going to be in societies that are raised around strength. You're probably going to be subjected to a lot of hard work, a lot of athletics, a lot of, like, fucking weight training, and you're going to be strong. We're going to have beefy elves sometimes. We're going to have beefy gnomes. We're going to have beefy halflings, and all of them are going to be hotter for it.
Yeah, yes. If you tend to live high in the mountains, that tends to change you too. And also, it is funny how often D&D races or species, as they're called now, are just separated by how their eyes work. Like, that seems to be the delineation of how you can tell one from the other.
It also gets us away from one of my biggest pet peeves, which is D&D going, look, we've invented a new species. It's people.
Yes. It's just like, people.
Asimar aren't a fucking stat block we needed. Fuck off.
Just people. I mean, the like, other one is what inherent magic can you cast, right?
I think that one's important, right?
Yeah.
Same sort of thing, right? Like if you've just got magic. But again, if we're doing God stuff, like that's religions, that's localized, right? Having parts of the pantheon better represented. And so like there are certain people who are blessed by the goddess of fucking starting fires or whatever. I don't give a shit.
Right. If you really wanted to separate people out, you mm-hmm. could do it by which gods bless this kingdom. Maybe you gain a little bit of their power because you are from a blessed land of the gods. And that yeah. makes you different from other people. Yeah. That would be a good way.
I don't mind that. Like if everybody basically comes out of character creation with magic initiate and you just get like a first level spell and a cantrip. And it's just like, these are the things I know how to do because I came from a farming village in the farming area. Therefore, I can cast fucking spike growth, not a first level spell, whatever. I don't care if I
whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like everyone from these lands of the south where it's sand and heat can all bring the light with them because that's where the sun is the strongest and is most blessed by Apollo or whatever. Not Apollo. What is the sun god again?
Amentor. Lathander. Lathander, Amentor is another
one. Or Lathander. Technically the same god, but different. Yeah.
Sometimes, depending who you ask.
No, it matters by region, just like everything else. Everything is about what resources are there, and magic is just another resource.
I think, legitimately, if you're people that are living in the desert and you're blessed by someone, you're probably not carrying light with you, because that's the biggest problem in your survival. Is it's too hot, it's too bright. The water right. keeps going away.
You'd hope it'd be water, but yeah. gods are dicks, so it's going to be light.
But yeah, like,
it's very dark in the desert at night.
No, I just find it odd when they're like, yeah, we've got these people. And like, sure, yeah, if you want to give them like the raw concept of an Asimar is not necessarily stupid. Same thing with tieflings, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just like these are anomalies and our magical abilities, right? They're blessings or curses or whatever the case may be. Like,
right.
We don't need a town of tieflings. We don't need to raise that particular problem. Like, because fun Forgotten Realms lore, tieflings were like that. We're just a weird thing that cropped up every now and then. Like, you might have someone in your bloodline made a pact and now three generations down, you got a tiefling coming out. And then it was something like when the gods rose up again, somehow Asmodeus managed to seize some bit of divine power, got elevated from being an archfiend to a true god. And then everyone who had some little bit of tiefling blood basically got a little power pulse and then turned into a tiefling. So you suddenly had entire cities that were tieflings and like family lines that were all tieflings all the way down. Like, why? You could give those abilities to, like you said, if you want to make it a fucking, these people live in the fucking tropics and are blessed by the gods of fire and heat. Like, all right, cool. Done. Handled. Maybe there's an elf with that spell. Maybe there's a fucking...
Yeah, others can do it. Just the people from this divine province...
Yeah.
Perhaps are more accustomed or more naturally able. They have more aptitude for it because yeah. of divinity, not because of racial differences.
We talked about this a little bit way back when on like Dispel Magic, but I think like making it almost a selection thing of like, oh, you can do that. You're meant for great things. It's part of a character creation thing because adventurers can do this.
Yes.
People who are going to go out and accomplish things are touched by the gods.
Yes.
Maybe there's like a couple people in town who are like, you know, don't talk to fucking that guy. He's 65. The gods touched him and he never left town. He's just been sitting here casting magic missile when he wants to get the crows out of his yard.
Or yeah, you used it for something practical.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, great. Now I can craft
I can cast
better.
Heat metal. God, I'm going to be such a great blacksmith. I don't even need the fucking...
Don't even need a forge. I just go dink and then hammer that shit out.
Yeah.
And we're good to go.
I just grip the fucking blade with my bare hand and it stays hot as long as I want it to.
Yeah, I can knock out 20 swords a day, man. I'm cranking
that
these guys.
That kind of shit is great. I love that.
It's so much more sensible because that's what we would use. We would use these things for industry.
It's more magical when you do that shit.
Yep. Also, with a world this magical, and again, with spells, especially because, like, let's take wizards, where anyone with enough study can learn it, and cantrips aren't that hard. Maybe you go to a vocational school, and now you can knock out mending. You've just eliminated cobblers and a ton of other jobs because you can just touch a thing and fix it.
I think every first level ability is probably actually exceptionally difficult.
First level, Chad, we're talking about
No. I mean, first level, you're a character and you have abilities.
Right.
Those are all spectacular.
Right. You can look at it that way. Like, but that's not what the book says. The book says you have to have a 13 intelligence and you can knock it out.
Okay, but again, 13. Hold on. Let me. I'm going to pull up some fucking probability.
All right. All right.
2d6.
Hit me, physicist.
Sorry.
Give me the numbers.
Guardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster. We're going to do straight 3d6 because the 3d6 drop lowest is specifically for heroes.
Okay.
It's because you're going to...
Are we factoring in that humans get a +1 in every category?
I mean, we can if you want. I don't really care that much.
All right.
I'm going to send you this link so that you can see what I'm talking about.
All right.
So there's like one plot right up the top of this article. They're all the probabilities are listed at the bottom.
Okay.
You have probability of being... at least an 11 is 50-50, right? 50% right. Chance that you're a 10 or lower, 50% chance that you're 11 or higher.
Right.
So a 13 or higher is, I'm going to rough this math out. You got a 0.5% chance of rolling an 18 plus about 1.5 on 17. So that's 2% plus 3% for 16. We're at 5. Plus 4.5, that's 9.5 at 15. Plus 7, so we're at 16% chance for 14. plus round that off to 10. You're at like 1 in 4 people has the raw potential to learn a cantrip.
Well, 1 in 4 people has the raw potential to multi-class to learn a cantrip, because in D&D, anyone can do it at first level.
You're right, but I think that's one of those rules oversights by dint of why would you do it otherwise? Right. If you don't have at least a +1 in your main ability becoming a wizard, then you're one of those smart asses who's like, I like to make myself a role playing challenge. And now everyone's going to beat every one of my saves and I'll never hit with an attack in the entire game that's about fighting.
Right. So we're talking now 12 or higher.
Yeah.
If you have a 12 or higher intelligence as a book wizard, which is the easiest way to learn, easiest quote unquote way to learn magic.
Their number is their number is a 13. So we'll work with that. 1 in 4 people has the raw potential to do it.
Right.
Now you need access to a school, non-trivial, right? Like,
right.
So you're not getting...
Isn't this roughly equivalent with people going to college? 1 in 4 plus access?
I think that's pretty fair, but I think that's what I'm getting at, right? Is like, when you get to those real small towns, how many people are kicking around with a bachelor's degree? Because we're also not talking about trade school, like wizard stuff is full on weird occult universities, right?
If you're going for the whole 9 yards, if you're just going to learn mending, there would be trade schools to teach you just mending.
There might be a weird wanderer guy who does that, but like, again, it's the question of how long does it take? How much does it cost? How accessible is that going to be? Right.
4 years to learn mending, let's say.
Sure.
Just maybe just that. 4 years to learn mending, and now you can repair anything.
Right.
Anything.
No, I'm not saying that it's not a big deal and people wouldn't go for it. I'm saying like we're looking at a maximum of 1 in 4 people.
Right.
And then you're tuning down based on how accessible you want magic to be to the general populace.
Sure.
Right. So I'm saying like this isn't going to be, oh, I'm the blacksmith. It would be real convenient if I just took a 4-year break from my career to learn how to do, like, say, up to first level spells.
Yeah.
Right? That's all that I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah. Like, and you're not making anything. You're just repairing things. But right. It would still have some impact.
It would be significant. It would be yeah. huge. But, like, you know, me learning to speak another language could potentially be huge. I haven't done that.
Right. Language is hard,
right? It's hard.
Just like learning mending would be hard. Yeah. Sure.
You have to have the opportunity. Like I, before they did the AI shit, did a whole bunch of Duolingo. I am menu fluent in a couple of languages. Can I have a conversation in any of them? Like barely even fucking English, bud.
Yeah.
And largely that comes down to accessibility, right? Like I don't hang out with a bunch of French people. I don't have anyone I can speak French to. My French has never improved past, you know, a halfway decent vocabulary for someone who is explicitly an Anglophone.
Right. Meanwhile, if you went and lived in Paris for 2 years, it would advance precipitously. Right.
You know,
or
that's sort of what I'm getting. Oh, you know, it'd be cool. My point simply being like that's sort of where I look at wizards, right? Is those are huge opportunities. And when you get them, are you coming home?
Right. Are you going to return to the town? That's the biggest one.
Are you going back to your little hick town to be, you know, the god among, you know, the small folk? Or are you going to find an opportunity proportional to the ability you now have?
There'd be all these medium-sized towns who would sponsor your 4 years at vocational school as long as you were willing to give 8 years back to the community.
Yeah, you go off. And we will send you to a mage college to just do your bachelor's to get up like once a day. You can cast a first level spell and also you can mend all of our horse shit.
Yeah.
And you return to service agreements. Yeah. I think that, again, great world building, really fun stuff. And even for those, do you think they're handing out those scholarships to 1 in 4 children?
No. The town's got enough gold to maybe send one person a year max. Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at here is like, yes, in theory. And if you want to build a world where magic is like hugely available, you know, maybe.
It's called Eberron.
Yeah.
It's already there.
Yeah.
Just pick up the book. They're still great.
They're really solid. But, you know, you can do a lot of stuff just making magic a little bit more available and having that be relevant. And of course, you know, all of my math didn't account for like sorcerers, but I gotta think a sorcerer, you're talking like half a percent chance.
Like, yeah, we're talking about a direct bloodline from a dragon.
Even half a percent, like 1 in 200 people. I don't know how, like, roughly speaking, how big was your high school? What was total population?
Oh, huge. 4,000 kids.
So that's like, what, like 20 sorcerers?
Right.
That's so significantly less than half a percent.
Right. Yeah, significantly, because we're talking like, okay, dragons are rare. First of all, they have to be, or there'd be no civilization. So dragons are rare, and then a dragon has to shape change into a guy or a girl, and then have sex with a person, and then somehow make a child.
Maybe it's not a bloodline thing. Maybe it's like an ancient dragon blessed your bloodline at some point. It just manifested.
Even rarer. Like,
yeah, exactly. I gotta say that a dragon being, one, sufficiently magical to pull off that blessing, and then two, wanting to, probably right. less frequent than a dragon just being like, I don't know, that thing doesn't have any scales, but I'd fuck it.
We're talking silver and bronze dragons and maybe black dragons to fuck with people, but pretty much the rest are going to be like not interested.
Yeah, absolutely. So like sorcerers are vanishingly uncommon. Warlocks are even worse because you have to get in contact with something.
Right. Something very big has to happen, and then that big thing has to be willing to do it.
This conversation is getting progressively more meandering, but I think it's these are interesting things to like actively think about instead of just what D&D presents in their books, which is stupid. Warlocks feel like they should be a prestige class.
I would agree.
Because like the base,
you should play that in game. You're coming into the game like, oh yeah, I have this whole backstory where I found a guy and he liked me.
I'm starting the game having met a like 20th level threat that was like, no, 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 no. Make me a deal. I'll tell you what, kid.
It should be like the Wheel of Time books, where they're all just kids who are farmers and all of their unique abilities were either found out about or gifted later. They were just people and you got to see how they became. Now, those books went on for a while. Nice. It got to be a little old, but long-winded. The origins were solid.
When you do a warlock, assuming that it isn't like, because I mean, fair play if you're doing something where it's like, no, 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 my town was burning down and I was just reaching out for whatever and an angel came down and was like, you need this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not religious. You don't worship my God. You cannot be a cleric. I cannot make you a paladin, but I can give you my power. And now you're a celestial pack warlock. Okay. That's fine.
What about all the other towns?
Like, the sort of standard, like, concepts are like the Fae. You have to get in contact with the Fae. That's hugely regionally locked. And then it's very much on the whims of those things. Like, you're probably not getting out of that situation alive.
Yeah.
Or you actively contacted a devil and survived. Okay, so at minimum, you're already probably a wizard. Like, to get in contact with another plane, we're talking like 5th, 6th level wizard.
Like, yeah.
Just to me, I'm not going to concern myself with warlocks in this sort of how likely is it that you can cast magic calculation, because by being a warlock, you imply that you're already probably some sort of spellcaster. You're already
absolutely
a weird hero level special.
Or at least has some innate ability or something special mm-hmm. about you, because why bother otherwise?
Yeah. Like I said, the three major types of warlock, the three primary ones, because I honestly, like, on top of, you know, being the second thoughts for warlocks, everything outside of the three primary subclasses, they're also increasingly weird when you think about the premise of a warlock. Like, the concept that you're a warlock and your power comes from undeath. What do you fucking mean? What is that sentence?
Yeah, where does that power actually lay? And why do you have
it? Like I mentioned, the idea of like, oh, I'm a celestial warlock. Okay, but if you made a deal with Jesus, isn't that being a cleric? I'm pretty sure that's being a cleric.
Right. And also, like, okay, maybe the town's burning and you reach out for power and some angel takes pity on you. That feels an awful lot like the people who are like, oh, this town killed 100 people, but one guy survived the flood. Thank God. What do you mean, thank God? Who sent the flood? Like, that's an angel going, oh, man, we're guilty here. I guess I'll bing this guy a little bit of payback. But,
like, when you think about the three primary types of warlock, you're looking at your archfey, your great old one, your devils.
The devils makes the most sense.
Devils make the most sense. You probably had to reach out to get that one. Great old ones also sort of make sense in terms of a it was on my whim sort of thing, but also exposure to great old ones, right?
Right.
Probably also had to reach out to get that one.
Yep.
The archfey is the only one that makes any sense to me to be like semi-frequent. I just got grabbed.
Oh, because they like to fuck with mortals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You stepped into the wrong mushroom circle, and now you got a deal to make.
You stepped in the wrong mushroom patch, and that particular fae thought the funniest thing to do was to gift you with power and send you back out into your world. No, they didn't. They think it's funnier to make you dance until you die.
Yeah, absolutely. And then 1 in 10 of them dances well enough that they're like, you know what? Why not?
Yeah, so we're sticking with like an absolute max of about a quarter of the population get magic powers. And then you get into the divine stuff, your druids, your clerics. Paladins are just clerics with swords. Fuck off. It's all the same shit.
Yeah.
Which becomes the same sort of thing, right? It's like, per town, how many clerics are you getting?
Because it doesn't matter how long you study. It matters if that god goes, okay.
And like, same sort of thing, right? Like, if you're meeting out that kind of power, it's probably on a needs basis, which means like, you're actually probably more limited than like a wizard. Wizard, it's how many people are smart enough.
Yeah, a god will take a measure of your whole soul.
But the clerics is like looking down at the town and being like, well, they got a holy man there. He's one of mine. He's doing the good bippity boppity booze. He's got like 50 years left in him. They don't need another one. I'm not going to like, unless I have a specific need for vengeance in this area, I'm not going to do another one.
Being a god in D&D is all about resource management. Yeah. It's a big game of civilization.
It's a bunch of meeples that keep moving places on their own.
Yeah, exactly. I got a church here. I'm good. It's cranking out worshipers. Yeah. No problem.
I don't need to put another one in.
No.
Like, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it'd be an entire campaign if a god, any of the gods, was just like, no. You know what? That town over there, all of them.
Yeah.
See that 7-year-old? That's a paladin. That's going to smite shit now.
That'd be amazing. I want to play that game. The town like, that just became holy.
The town that became holy. And then the immediate reaction of all of the gods being like, what? I'm sorry. Fucking. Come here.
Yep.
What do you mean you have 5,000 paladins?
Yeah.
Why?
How did that happen? Why? What are you doing?
Fuck how? Why? Why did you need 5,000 people to be able to smite?
And if they don't get the answer they want, they're going to destroy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and the other bit being, depending on the god, depending on the level of holy, right? Like, if you send me a town and you're like, oh, I've created this town, it's got 5,000 paladins in it. I decided to bless everyone because it was funny that day. Get the angels. All of them. How many we got? Get more.
Yeah, this is a category one problem.
Like, we're just going to smite that town.
Right. I don't even know why you did it, but we're going to erase this thing off the map.
You've got 5,000 paladins? All right, cool. So they're all still level one, right?
Yeah. Which can still do a lot of damage. You get a lot of level one smites, but yeah.
No, because I don't think you get smites until like level 3-ish.
Maybe. Oh, that's probably true. I'm so used to starting out games as paladins at like 4th level. Yeah.
Well, that's because that's when they're good.
That's when they're interesting. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The moral of the story, like, you're on average looking at a maximum of a quarter of the population even remotely capable of being magical. We then have to factor in access. You then have to factor in, like, are they coming back to town?
Right.
Yeah,
you get smite at 2nd level. Yeah. So that first group of paladins has to survive the initial wave, and then maybe.
Yeah. Which, again, like, for a character, right? It's like, what's your deal? Well, I'm a paladin of Sirik. No, I know. Not by choice. God of Chaos decided my entire town should be paladins. And then the town was leveled by angels. And they were like, good enough, right? Everybody's got paladins. So like the two of us that got out of there alive, that's a rounding error to the celestial plane.
Right. The actual fighters in town that got the power, they actually pulled it off.
They made sure.
The 6-year-olds, not so much.
There was a couple of us that were like actual worshipers, and those guys got wrecked.
It was a whole youngling situation.
When the first angel landed, I got thrown across town by the shockwave, and that's the only reason, like, I hit a tree, and that's the only reason I'm still alive.
Yep. Angel's not going to walk up and smite you when you're already unconscious. We covered that in the Deva episode, in the Diva episode.
Will They're not murder. Gonna go,
that they will not murder, right?
This actually brings us back to the conversation. Like, very concretely, if an angel was sent and told, smite the party, yeah, they would.
Yeah.
They would murder in a heartbeat. Yeah. Like, that's their purpose.
Angels are robots.
Yeah.
But they don't do it because they want to.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not murder, it's programming.
Yeah. Fair. Anywho, like, you can do some really cool world building when you start, like, just forsaking the idea of Elf Town, you know? Oh, even just the stuff like, oh, this town exclusively worships this one god. That's silly. That's not how anything has ever worked.
That's not how pantheons work.
That's not how pantheons
go. It just isn't. If you have to do your farm, you worship the farm god. If you're going out to sea on your boat, you worship the sea god. If a family member's ill, you worship the god of healing.
Like,
or at least not worship, you say a little prayer.
Towns with like patron deities or like primary deities, that's the one they worship the most. There was no town in Greece that was like fucking Aphrodite all day, every day.
No, absolutely not. If you're on the coast and like your entire industry is around fishing, sure, you probably have big temples to the god of the sea. Right. But there's other gods. You go light a candle in the temple once in a while. Yeah.
Maybe you'll go worship that one and then also stop off at Poseidon and be like, hey, if you could put in a good word with your brother, that would be dope.
No human is going to go, well, all these gods exist, but I'm just laser focused here. No, you're going to hedge your fucking bets. When my dad's an atheist, hardcore atheist, I was dating this one guy who grew up in a pretty religious household. And he came over to our house one day during Christmas and we had a Christmas tree up. And he looked at him and he's like, why? And he's like, well, you know, and then he asked, like, why'd you have Aram baptized? And my dad thought about it for a second. He was like, you know, you got to hedge your bets. And he's right.
Yeah. It's Pascal's wager.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one last thing before we call that enough random world building rambles.
Sure.
Just because we've gotten onto it. I think that there should be like 30 gods of all the different things, right? Like the idea that the elves have their pantheon and they have their own god of agriculture and the gnomes have a god of agriculture. That makes sense to me because that is how people work.
Sure.
I think the reason for that should be that the gods don't show up, or like when they do, it's very uncommon and they show up in a form that is most palatable to the people they show up to, whatever reasoning you want.
Yeah.
I think there should just be one god of agriculture.
Right. It's the same god. It's just showing itself to, it's just in the form that you would expect.
Yeah. Like you are a desert wandering nomadic people. It shows up in like the standard, like, very thin, flowy robes that are going to be good for desert heat and keeping sand out of all your holes.
Yeah, you get the Jesus God.
Yeah. You worship that same guy, but you're in a mountain showing up in furs because that's what you expect people to look like.
Yeah, if you're an orc, you expect an orc to show up. If you're a halfling, you expect a halfling to show up. It'd be weird if they didn't.
Yeah. And then that still lets you do all of your, like, holy shenanigans and wars and all that stuff, because the thing that is the problem is almost always the priest.
Yes.
And also it's your relationship to that thing, right? Like we said, if you're, you know, in a fishing town, yeah, of course the god of the sea is fickle, but also a thing of abundance. You know, sometimes we lose people in the ocean, but like mostly they come back with, you know, the thing that's going to sustain us.
Right. That's the reason why the town exists in the first place. It usually works out.
If you live in the floodplains, the god of the sea is sometimes a cruel motherfucker.
But the reason why you settled in the floodplains is because once the waters recede, that's the richest soil.
Yes, because the god of agriculture supports us, even though the god of the sea, for whatever reason, has decided he hates this town. And now if you have a weird cult crop up worshiping the ocean in town, they're probably like the sort of psychos who are like, no. You've seen every few years the town is underwater. We are meant to die. And in the name of the god of the sea, I will make sure we all die.
Yeah. Well, also, though, it could just be as a reminder, like when those flash floods hit West Virginia that were so devastating, there were people who were saying, like, the river is no longer where it's supposed to be. And I'm like, no. Unfortunately, that river is exactly where it's supposed to be. And if you listen to the native people back when you first settled this town who told you not to do it, you wouldn't be in this situation.
In that specific case, yes. But also those things can happen because, like, you're engineering, like when you build roads and shit. If the plains flood, then maybe it's the path of the dams are one of the most obvious. Like, you did that, like you redirected the river, so the river is sort of resetting itself. But if you built like a road where you wore the terrain down, say it's fresh, like it's a gravel road, maybe that's actually just the more convenient path for the water to flow on now. So it isn't supposed to be there, but
you built a flood landing strip and it just came to you.
Anywho, but like that sort of thing, if that's your mentality of like, oh, it floods and you believe it to be in response to things, maybe you worship the sea god as a god of justice.
Sure.
Right. Is like we did, like the god of punishment specifically, like a lawful evil type of god of justice.
We deserve this, or you deserve this more. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I do like the idea of like the god of punishment being a lawful evil god. Like, it's not even like, no. We hurt people who do wrong. And if, you know, it means burning the entire town to do it.
And not even just wrong. We hurt people who strayed from some path that I believe in.
Yeah.
Therefore, you're punished.
And as long as your core worship still hits the buttons of the god, like, are the gods paying enough attention to you that they're going to say no?
Right.
Right? Like,
how capricious are they?
How distant are they? Right?
Like, yeah.
Just, you know, take a, how big would you say is a big cult? And I mean like enough to cause a problem in the world today.
Enough to cause, okay. Worldwide enough to cause a problem. I guess we're talking.
No, locally, like we're talking about something that's going to require adventurers to put down.
Well, if it's a town, 20, if it's a country, 5,000.
Yeah. Okay, so there's 8 billion people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
How many voices is 5,000?
Not much.
Like, are you going to fucking clue in? Are you going to like...
No. It's going to get drowned out by all the
others. You don't even notice. And as long as those voices are like tapped into the thing that pulls your magic, that the worship that connects them to you is valid...
Yeah, but you got to get to at least Scientology levels before it starts to register.
Yeah, like if you're not talking like a couple hundred thousand, like, or again, like in the way I think about it, right, is like there are going to be modes of worship or certain things that you sort of have to do to connect to that god. Unless they break that connection. And even then, like, that's not you cutting them off. That's the connection being weak and not linking up anymore.
Right.
Like,
you need a problem to be big enough that your priests are on their knees going, hey, God, we can really use your help with this. You need enough signals coming back from your own people for that to be an issue.
Which, again, really cool thing to be able to do in a campaign would be to like pull enough focus from the cult that when you're fighting the bad guy, they just straight up stop getting spells.
Yeah.
Meet the god later on in the campaign after you've, you know, defeated that particular tier and be like, hey, thanks for intervening on our behalf and cutting that. Huh? Who?
Yeah. What do you mean?
A cult? I wouldn't let... That doesn't sound like me.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for drawing justice? Enough psychic divine energy.
I just do fish.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
We were just having a festival. That was just Turtle Fest. What are you talking about?
You're being crazy. Don't fucking bring that up to me again, or I swear to God, I will put you in the bottom of the ocean.
Exactly. They see things on a different scale. Yeah. It's a totally different chessboard to them. And it's, again, it's like playing Civilization. Mm-hmm. You don't see the individual people's needs. You see the needs of at least a town.
You see one happy face symbolizing mm-hmm. how many thousands of people.
Exactly. Yep.
Do you know for a fact that in any of your towns in Civ, there isn't a serial killer?
No. None whatsoever. You have I mean, no there isn't. Little
that's
not bar.
How that game works, but you know. Fucking.
But there are. If it's a civilization, of course there are. Maybe that's why some people are unhappy. But there's no slider for the serial killer. No, you don't know how many are there.
To click on Jack and be like, "Stop ripping."
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, like I said, I was just listening to a bunch of stuff recently, and it got me on a world building sort of thought train.
How can we sum this up?
Be creative in the way you do world building. Ask questions about why things work the way they do. Like, investigate it a little bit.
Understand resource management.
Understand resource management. Look into probabilities a little bit more. No one's going to learn math. Are you kidding me?
No, but you can think about them abstractly at the very least. Like, how many of these people are there actually there? What impact would that have on your world?
And, you know, that thought process of, okay, hypothetically, one in four people is capable in the first place, but how many of them are getting the actual ability? What do they have to accomplish to do the thing? Right.
Yep. Like, and a lot of people have trouble with writing. They find it super intimidating. If you're just thinking of groups of numbers, it can help you break that down and make it make a lot more sense than just staring at a blank page.
Which also leads into, like, when you're thinking about it in coarser grain, you're eventually going to get into a thing where you go, why is this the case? And that's how you write fine details, is by explaining.
Yep. I'll tell you what, I tell this to everyone. Whenever I world build, I make the map first. I make the map, I play with the map, I place some cities, I place some resources, I sit back and look at it, and just having that lets me look at it and say, okay, well, these people would have this and they wouldn't have this, so they'd probably trade or maybe have some conflict here, and the world kind of evolves out from that for me because I have something to look at and think about.
You know what's funny about that? Is we've talked about this a little bit. When it comes to building a campaign and anything, I don't world build.
I know.
Just it'll happen eventually, mostly accidentally, and then I'll have enough context to be like, oh, well, I should draw a line around this. I guess that's a country now.
That works too. That's how your whole Arcane College came into being, because we played enough games where it would make sense to necessitate one.
Yeah. Well, like,
and your own trauma with higher education.
That's the other fun bit, is pull on what you know.
Yeah.
If what you know is that school sucks sometimes.
Put it into your world.
Why not?
Absolutely. That is a universal truth you can bank on.
Mm-hmm. No, like I said, just you find a lever to pull. Pull it until it stops being interesting, and then start asking why those things are there.
Yep.
Like, I mean, frankly, that's actually the underlying theme here, right? Is that idea of, like, isolationism doesn't make sense. How, like, if there are no elven miners, how the fuck are they making jewelry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, well, they must be mingling. Well, then, do the elves change their mentality? Are they still doing 50-year crafts? Are the humans that are living with the elves doing 50-year crafts? Like,
yeah.
And you start asking yourself these questions, and you just chase to the logical conclusion until you feel satisfied with it. And then you go like, okay, that makes sense. That stays. What about over here? And then eventually you'll chase down enough threads that you have something that feels complete. I would say in any of those above, like, thing, any of the discussions we just had, the only thing missing is an action item for a fucking party to deal with, right? With the exception of the... the city of paladins.
Right. That's actually, a no, even big then, action item. Like,
I'm not sure that that motivates a campaign, because the people who are going to be pissed about that are the other gods.
Yeah,
which means there's like, now you still have to figure out what your bad guy is there. Like, is your bad guy the god that made too many paladins? Is your bad guy the other god that's like, well, if you have that many paladins, I'm going to raise that town? Is that just the source of a couple of paladins threat? Like, I mentioned,
God's a way of not explaining.
Yeah.
Just saying, go do.
Yeah.
Maybe you go do, and then you get there and you're like, but why?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just the source of your bad guy, right? Like, I just, as a random fucking statement, mentioned like, oh yeah, no, I got knocked out. Like, two of us got out of town. Okay, well, now you've got one NPC that's just like a paladin who's like, I didn't want this, but I got out of town. And then there's the other guy that he knows and has not thought about in a while, who was made a paladin on the whims of the god of chaos and now has a grudge against a different god.
Yeah.
That's a fucking bad guy waiting to happen.
Or maybe the same god, because I tell you what, if I was in a town and some god rose everyone up with divine power and then we got rocked for it and I was the survivor, not only am I going to have strange feelings towards that god who gifted us in the first place, but I'm going to have survivor's guilt built on top of that. So maybe I hate that god, despite the fact that he makes me powerful.
You have the two modes of thought, right? Is like, if it's the god of chaos, then maybe that's actually kind of
the whole reason.
That's still not even the whole reason. Maybe the idea of, I'm going to upset the order, I'm going to destroy the god of chaos, is actually a form of worship for the god of chaos, so you maintain your powers. Or maybe you take the D&D school of thought of like, no, you connected me to the idea of these holy powers. Now I'm an oath breaker. Like, I still have this line of power and I believe in something strong enough to hold it. That thing is not you, and I'm coming.
Yep. I love Oathbreaker Paladins.
They're good. They're solid. Yeah. I don't mind that at all. I still kind of like the idea that if you broke your oath, you have to like find something to fill the gap. But, you know, the idea.
It depends how it's broken. The Oathbreaker Paladin I'm playing in the Curse of Strahd game, mm-hmm. I got taken in by Strahd, captured for a year, was tormented by this one jailer, and then chose to forgive them. And Helm walked away from me because I forgave them. Because Helm thinks that person should be punished, but my heart said I need to forgive. So there's ways to get there in really interesting ways.
There are. I'm not saying there aren't. It's another one of those things where, like, same as putting the tieflings in the core book, right? Where I think the Oathbreakers hit the same space for me of like, just because they're an option doesn't mean they should be likely.
Right. They're not common.
Yeah. Like, if you have a city the size of fucking Toronto and you've got three tieflings, that's a lot of tieflings.
That's a lot
of
tieflings.
People would take note of that. Right. Like,
absolutely they would.
Oathbreakers
even in
are
Toronto,
the same sort
people
of thing,
are gonna see
right?
horns come out of your head. Yeah.
Where like, yeah, you could technically be an Oathbreaker, but like, there aren't gonna be a bunch of them.
No, they may be people who fell from grace, but they just lost their power.
Yeah.
The guy who still has his power, but it's different, that's going to be rare.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Anywho, like I said, chase your fucking bad ideas down, and maybe it turns out they're not bad.
Yeah, make shit weird.
Yeah.
Make it weird. Make it unique.
Ask
make
a dumb question, answer it, and it will be good. What happens in the first 1,000 years of fantasy civilization when we still don't know that elves are... I might have actually pitched this on one of our, like, conversations, but I still want to run a game where the world is on the edge of war because it's the year 900 and the first elf dies of old age.
Yeah.
Like, they have a full-on, like, gentocracy, functionally. Except it takes on a completely different meaning in the case of elves, where they just age for 1,000 years. But now the oldest elf who has been in charge since the beginning dies of old age. They didn't know that was even possible. So everyone is still sitting there going like, no, that has to be a weird fucking poison or a spell. And if it was a spell, it was those fucking humans. I guarantee it. They've been fucking around with magic. We taught them a little bit, and then they started experimenting. We should have never fucking taught them anything.
Yep. You get to 30, you're 30 forever, then all of a sudden you just die?
Yeah.
That's different than how humans age.
Ask a bad question, and there will be a good answer somewhere.
Absolutely. And frankly, most things that are bad are created because of our own fears. They're not external. They're things we invoked. Start the first cataclysm because elves didn't know they could die.
Baldur's Gate talks a little bit about Karsus's folly, where there was one guy who like invented a 13th or something level spell to make himself a god. And it was so powerful that it killed the god of magic in trying to just hold the weave together. And that's why there can't be 10th level, anything higher than 9th level spells anymore. Mistra yep. was just like, nope, I died trying to stop that. We're not doing yeah. any more of that shit.
Yeah, you right? can only run so much power through these yeah. circuits, guys, and then everything blows.
The idea that the elves are like, no, we need to get all of the magic because we just figured out we could die and that cannot be allowed.
That's basically why the rings were made, because elf society was collapsing and they were perishing. So they made the fucking rings. That's basically the story right yeah, there.
You get a new generation of humans every 25 years, give or take. So we're talking like 40 generations of humans that you've seen come and go. And suddenly you're like, that might happen to you too.
Mm-hmm.
Terrified.
Absolutely.
You're getting ring wraiths. You're getting fucking liches.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen every time.
Humanity has accepted that they die sometimes. The first necromancers were elves who realized they had to fear death.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Exactly
fucking
true.
Build that world. Write that campaign, you motherfuckers. Go do it.
Go now. Do it, and we'll have you on the show.
We'll read it first. If you do it and it's good.
If it's good. It's good. If you did it well, we'll have you on the show. No promises.
If you do it and it sucks, then I'm going to have to tell you that it sucks, and that's going to be a really uncomfortable conversation.
Oh, we man, just we won't tell you. We're not this. Confrontational. Well, Dylan is more than I am, but I'm not. Thanks for joining us for the first supporter exclusive episode of Dylan is Mad About a Thing. This show will not have a regular release schedule, despite the fact that Dylan is frequently mad about many things. We'll post new episodes to Patreon and Apple Podcasts when Dylan can no longer contain his anger about a specific thing. Our hosts for this episode were Dylan Mellenfont and Aram Vardian. I also did the editing. To listen to more supporter-exclusive content, audio and video DMs notes from Kill Every Monster, and ad-free episodes of all our shows, check us out at patreon.com/deadghostpro. Or subscribe to Dead Ghost Productions right in your Apple Podcast app. Thank you for listening to and supporting the Dead Ghost Podcasting Network. We'll see you next time. Dylan is mad about a thing.
Aram!
Sorry! Stacy's a little excited this morning. You know how toddlers can be.
Oh god, how much is that gonna cost?
Yeah, this one won't be cheap.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster. Stacy, you put that cow down right now, young lady. Don't you snarl at me.